This book contains up to 4 sides per cassette. Side 1, RC50859, Lord Brocktree, by Brian Jakes. Illustrated by Fangorn. Text copyright 2000 by the Redwall Abbey Company, Limited. Read by Brian Kahn. This book contains 370 pages on 9 sides. If you would like to skip over any remaining announcements or introductory material, place your cassette player in fast forward until a beep is heard. Stop at that point to hear the table of contents, or at the second beep to locate the beginning of the book. Library of Congress Annotation. The mountain of Salamandastron needs the help of Brocktree, the Badger Lord, and Dottie, a young hair maid, when evil comes in the form of the wildcat Ungat Trun and his blue hordes. This is the 13th tale in the Redwall series. For grades 5 through 8, 2000. From the book jacket. From the pen of Redwall's master storyteller, Brian Jakes. The brazen young hairmaid Dottie and the badger warrior Lord Brocktree, unlikely comrades, set out for Salamandastron together, only to discover the legendary mountain has been captured by the wildcat Ungat Trun and his blue hordes. This is not what they expected. Seized by rage, the badger knows blood wrath is not enough. To face the blue hordes, the two must rally an army. Hares and otters, shrews and moles, mice and squirrels, and execute a plan that makes up in cleverness what it lacks in force. With the spellbinding magic that is only Redwall, master storyteller Brian Jakes brings this 13th novel in the epic gloriously to life, dramatically revealing the power and beauty of true friendship. About the author. Brian Jakes is a consummate storyteller who began writing his beloved Redwall tales to entertain the children at Liverpool's School for the Blind. He wanted to create a story so full of life the children could see it. Unbeknownst to him, a good friend showed the manuscript to a publisher who saw the genius in it. Thus began the Redwall series, of which Lord Brocktree is the 13th volume. Mr. Jakes lives in Liverpool, where he hosts his own weekly radio show, and continues to spin his magnificent tales, creating new chapters in the Redwall saga. In addition, Mr. Jakes has written 7 Strange and Ghostly Tales, a collection of ghost stories, and The Great Redwall Feast, an illustrated storybook with pictures by Christopher Denise. Other books by Brian Jakes: Redwall, Mossflower, Matameo, Mariel of Redwall, Salamandastron, Martin the Warrior, The Bellmaker, Outcast of Redwall, Pearls of Lutra, The Long Patrol, Marl Fox, The Legend of Luke, Redwall Map and Riddler, Redwall Friend and Foe, Build Your Own Redwall Abbey. In memory of Jerry Ryan, a great singer and a good friend. Contents. Book 1. The Days of Ungat Trun, also entitled Dorothea Leaves Home. Side 1. Book 2. At the Court of King Bucko, also entitled The Tribulations of a Hairmaid. Side 3. Book 3. Comes a Badger Lord, also entitled A Shawl for Aunt Blanche. Side 6. Reader's note, the map found in the print edition is not included in this recording. End of note. I am the teller of tales. Gaze into the fire with me, for I know of the Badger Lords and their mountain by the sea. 'Tis of a fearsome warrior, full of fate and destiny, who followed dreams along strange paths, unknown to such as we. This Badger Lord was fearless, as all who followed him knew, and the hair maid he befriended, why, she was as young as you, but no less bold or courageous, full of valor and strong of heart. Ah, young'uns, like you, good and true, may stand to take their part. So, here is my story. May it bring some smiles, and a tear or so. It happened once upon a time, far away and long ago. Outside, the night wind keens and wails. Come listen to me, the teller of tales. Prologue. Lord Rossano of Salamandastron put aside his quill and capped a tiny gourd of ink with a wooden stopper. Leaving his study, the badger went downstairs, clutching a wooden pail full of parchment scrolls. He was met at the bottom by his wife, Lady Rosalon, who shook her head reprovingly at him.
So, that's where my pail went. I've been looking everywhere for it.
Aren't you ashamed of yourself? Pinching pails! However, Rossano looked anything but ashamed. He held up the pail and shook it triumphantly. Look, Rosalon, I've finished it! My history of Lord Brocktree's journey and conquest of our mountain! Rosalon smiled at her husband. He was the kindest and wisest badger Salamandastron had ever known. Though when he was enthusiastic about his pet projects, he behaved like a cheerful, eager youngster. She took hold of his ink-stained paw as they walked to the dining hall.
They're all waiting, you know. Remember, you promised to read them the story once you'd completed it.
Rossano chuckled.
I don't suppose Snowstripe, Melanius, and the Leverets would wait a day or two until I tidy this manuscript up a bit?
Rosalon stopped Rossano in his tracks.
There's not just our son and daughter and some young Leverets waiting to hear you read the tale. Word has got round. Every hare on the mountain wants to hear it, too.
Rossano turned and made for the stairs, but his wife held on to his paw. The badger lord appeared rather flustered.
Every hare, you say? You mean all of them?
But, I only meant this as something for the young'uns, to teach them a little of our mountain's history.
Rosalon squeezed his paw affectionately.
That's not fair. What about us older ones, the parents and grandkin? Aren't we entitled to know our mountain's history? I, for one, would love to hear it. Besides, you have a wonderful storytelling voice. Oh, say you'll read it to us all, Rossano, please.
The badger lord allowed himself to be led off again toward the dining hall.
Oh, all right, but it'll take a few days. This is a big work. I've been 2 seasons now, reading through dusty old parchments, interviewing creatures for stories about their ancestors, and studying carvings in the forge. I've sat on the shore, listening to sea otters, stood beneath trees, recording squirrels. Huh, I've even had to crouch for 4 days in a mole dwelling. Had to keep waking those 2 fat old moles up so I could hear their story. Do you know? It was told to them by their great-grandma, who had it from her old aunt's cousin, twice removed on the uncle's side, or so they said.
Rosalon stood with her hand on the door latch.
Yes, yes, I know all that, Rossano. It won't matter how long you take to read the thing. You can space it out a bit every evening. Nothing nicer on a winter's night than a good story. Now, the fire's banked up. Supper's on the table, and every beast is waiting, so in you go.
The dining hall was packed to capacity, mainly with hares, though there was a scattering of moles, squirrels, hedgehogs, mice, and some visiting otters. Lord Rossano was immediately captured by his 2 young offspring, Melanius and Snowstripe, who tugged him up the 3 broad steps to where his chair had been placed next to a supper-laden table.
Papa! Papa! Read the story to us, please, please. Are me and Snowstripe in the story, Papa?
Rossano chuckled as he sat them down on the cushioned chair arms on either side of him.
Great seasons! You'd have to be many, many seasons old to be in this tale.
Now sit still and be quiet, my dears. Silence fell over the hall, broken only by the doors opening as the duty cooks came hurrying in. Every beast turned around and shushed them loudly, and quiet was restored once more. Rossano split open a small loaf, cut a thick chunk of cheese, and jammed it in the bread, making himself a rough sandwich. Every eye was upon him as he took a few good bites and washed them down with a half tankard of October ale.
The still atmosphere was broken by a small hedgehog squeaking aloud,
"When's the Badger Lord going to get on with it?"
Rosano left off eating and looked quizzically at the hog babe.
"Get on with what?"
A deafening roar rang out from the crowded hall.
"The story!"
Rosano looked up in mock surprise.
"Oh, did you want me to read you my story?"
He clapped paws to his ears as the noise hit him like a tidal wave.
"Yes!"
The small, polished hardwood stick that Rosano always carried with him was lying on the table. Lady Rosalon picked it up and waved it warningly under his nose.
"Lord Rosano, will you please stop teasing and read the story? Either that or straight off to bed with you."
Every beast, especially the little ones, laughed at the idea of a badger lord being sent to bed for being naughty. Rosano pulled the first scroll from the pail. Unrolling it across the tabletop, he placed his tankard on the top edge to stop it folding back. His kind, brown eyes roamed the hall, a smile hovering upon his lips as he spoke.
"Friends, I will read to you for a few hours each evening. Salamandastron's history goes back further into the mists of time than even I would dare to guess. But the mountain, as we know it today, with its leveret school, long patrol, and laws set down for all to live in peace by, is due mainly to the work of one creature, Lord Brocktree of Brockhall. It was he who was responsible for the life we enjoy here, the outer gardens and terraces, the orchards and crop-growing areas, and the wonderful chambers so full of comfort. Other badgers were here before him, and they were all good lords in their own fashion, but not until the time of Lord Brocktree of Brockhall did the mountain really come into its own. I have recorded the history of his early years as faithfully as I could. So then, here it is. I hope you learn lessons from it, take heed of its value, and most of all, I hope you enjoy it as a mighty tale of great warriors."
Book 1. The Days of Ungat Trun. Also entitled, Dorothea Leaves Home. 1. Loneliness was everywhere. Hopelessness and an air of foreboding had settled over the western shores, casting their pall over land, sea, and the mountain of Salamandastron. Yet no beast knew the cause of it. A pale moon of early spring cast its wan light down upon the face of the mighty deeps, touching each wind-driven wave-top with flecks of cold silver. Soughing breakers crashed endlessly upon the strand, weary after their journey from the corners of the earth. Above the tideline, gales chased dry sand against the rocks, forcing each particle to sing part of the keening dirge that blended with the sounds of the dark ocean. In his chamber, overlooking the scene, Lord Stonepaw sat in his great chair, feeling as ancient as the mountain he ruled. In one corner, his bed stood neatly made, unused now for a score of seasons. He was far too old. The ritual of lying down each night and rising next day had become painful for his bones. Drawing his cloak tight against vagrant night chills, the once mighty badger lord squinted rheumily out to sea, worrying constantly about his domain. Without bothering to knock, a venerable hare creaked his way into the chamber, leaning heavily upon a small serving cart which he was pushing before him. Stonepaw's efforts to ignore him were of no avail. He fussed hither and thither like a broody hen with only one chick, chuntering constantly as he went about his chores.
"No fire lit again, eh, my lord? Catch your death of cold one night, you will, mark my words."
Sparks from the flint he was striking against a blade, coupled with his wheezy blowing, soon had a flame from dry moss crackling against pine twigs.
That's better. What? Come on, get this supper down. You've got to blink and eat well to live, you know."
Stonepaw shook his head at the sight of the food his servant was laying out on the small table at his side.
"Leave me alone, Fleet's Cut. I'll have it later." "No, you won't, sire. You'll flippin' well have it now. I ain't goin' to the bother of luggin' vittles from the kitchen to watch you let 'em go cold. Hot vegetable soup and fresh bread. That'll do you the world of good, what?
The ancient badger sighed with resignation.
Oh, give your tongue a rest. I'll take the soup. Bread's no good to me, though. Too crusty. Hurts my gums.
Fleetscut brooked no arguments. Drawing his dagger, he trimmed the crusts from the still oven-warm loaf.
No crust now, what? Dip it in your soup, my lad.
The hare perched on the chair arm, helping himself to soup and bread, in the hope that it might encourage his master's appetite. Stonepaw snorted mirthlessly.
Huh. Look at us. Me, Stonepaw, hardly able to hold a spoon with the same paws that used to lift huge boulders. And you, Fleetscut, doddering round with a trolley.
The hare nudged his old friend and cackled.
Maybe so, but I can still remember the days when I could leap three times as high as that trolley, aye, and run from dawn to dusk without stopping to draw breath. Wasn't a bally hare on the mountain could even stay with my dust trail. Those were the seasons, what? You too, Stonepaw. I saw you lift boulders bigger than yourself when we were young. You could break spears and bend swords with your bare paws.
Stonepaw gazed at the paws in question.
That may have been my old messmate, but look at my paws now. Silver-furred, battered, scarred, and so full of aches and pains that they're no good for anything.
Fleetscut hauled himself from the chair arm and went to lean at the long window overlooking the sea.
So, what's the blinkin' problem? Every beast has to grow old. Nothing can stop that. We've had a long and good life, you and me. Fought our battles, protected the western coast against all comers, and never once backed off from any fight. There's been peace now for as long as any creature on the mountain can remember. What are you worrying about, sire?
With a grunt, Stonepaw rose slowly from his chair and joined his companion at the window. He stared out at the darkened waters as he replied.
Peace has gone on too long. Something inside me says that trouble such as these shores have never known is headed our way. I wish that we could live our days out without having to take up arms again, Fleetscut. But deep down I'm stone-cold certain it won't happen. Worst part of it is that I can't even guess what the future holds.
Fleetscut looked strangely at the Badger Lord, then shuddered and went to warm himself by the fire.
Sire, I know exactly how you feel. Matter of fact, I was thinking those very thoughts this afternoon when old Blench the cook said to me, "Looks like evil coming soon." She says, "See for yourself, there ain't a sight or sound of a single bird anywhere on land or sea."
Lord Stonepaw stroked his long silver beard thoughtfully.
"Blench was right, too, now you come to mention it. Where do you suppose all the birds have gone? The skies are usually thick with gulls, cormorants, petrels, and shearwaters in late spring."
Fleetscut shrugged expressively.
"Who knows what goes on in the mind of a seabird? Maybe they know things we don't. Stands to reason, though, sire. Why should they hang out if they know something bad is due to come here?"
The badger smiled at his faithful old friend.
"Why, indeed? They have no duty to protect this coast, and they can always build nests elsewhere. Leave me now. I'll talk to you on the morrow. There are things I must do."
Fleetscut had never questioned his badger lord's authority, and was not about to do so now. Bobbing a stiff bow, he left the chamber, pushing his trolley. Lord Stonepaw made his way to the secret chamber where countless other badger rulers of Salamandastron had gone to dream mysterious dreams. It was a place that would have made the hairs on any other creature's back stand stiff. Ranged around the walls of the inner chamber were lines of little carvings telling of the mountain's history. Guarding it in fearsome armored array stood the mummified bodies of past badger warriors. Earthrun the Gripper, Spear Lady Gorse, Bluestripe the Wild, Sita Ruler the Just, and many other legendary figures. From his own lantern, Stonepaw lit three others. Then, Taking a pawful of herbs from a shelf, he sprinkled them into the lantern vents. As the sweet-smelling incense of smoke wreathed him, he sat down upon a carved rock throne. Closing both eyes, he breathed in deeply and let his mind take flight. After a while, he began speaking.
If the gates of dark forest lie open for me soon, if the shadow of evil darkens our western shores, who will serve in my stead? My hairs are scattered far and wide. Feast time makes young warriors restless. They are gone questing afar for adventure. Only the old guard are left here with me on this mountain, dim of eye and feeble of limb, the seasons of their strength long flown.
Lord Stonepaw's eyes began flickering, and the herbal smoke swirled about his great silver head as he sat up straight, his voice echoing around the rock-bound cavern.
Where is the strongest of the strong?
Who can be so perilous that a force of fighting hares will rise and follow that creature? Is there a badger roaming the earth, brave and mighty enough to become Lord of Salamandastron? Outside on the strand, the gale increased. Waves crashed widespread on the tide line in their effort to conquer the land. Like a maddened beast, the ocean roared. Sand swept upward into winding columns, driving, spiraling, crazily across the shore. Yet still was there no sound of birds or any other living thing to be heard. A foreboding of great evil lay over the land and sea, but no beast knew the cause of it. Yet. 2. In the northeast reaches of Mossflower Wood, a traveler had walked straight into trouble. Drigg Slopmouth and his brood numbered 13 in all, nasty, vicious stoats every one. Drigg's family loved to cheat, lie, steal, bully, or murder, even among themselves. Their chief hatred was honest toil. The only work they had done that day was to lie in wait for an unsuspecting wayfarer, a lanky, carefree young hare known to her friends as Dotty. She was reckless and impatient and not overfond of studying, but what she lacked in scholarly achievement she made up for in impudence, courage, and a sharp wit. The realization that she was surrounded by Drigg and his band of robbers did not seem to upset her unduly. She nodded amiably at them.
"Good morning, chaps and chappesses. Not a bad old sort of day for the time of season, what?"
A snigger arose from the stoats.
"Look at what we caught, Drigg. A posh rabbit."
Dotty rounded on the speaker, a fat, frowsy female.
"Specifically incorrect, don't you know, my old stotus? I'm a hare, not a rabbit. Now say it correctly after me.
Look at what we caught, Drigg. A posh hare."
Drigg stepped between them, pointing to the traveling haversack, which resembled an outsized handbag swinging from the young hare's paw.
"Empty your bag on the ground."
Dotty smiled sweetly at him.
"Oh, I'd rather not, sir. It'd take me half the day to get the jolly old thing repacked, what?"
A large, dim-looking stoat, Drigg's eldest son, pushed forward.
"Then tell us what you got in your bag, and don't say it isn't nothing."
Dotty clucked reprovingly.
"You mean don't say it isn't anything? Deary me, I'll bet you never attended woodland school."
The big stoat snarled, pawing at a long dagger he wore hanging from his belt.
"Just show us what's in the bag, rabbit."
The hare maid wagged a paw at him.
"There you go again with that rabbit error. Did I call you a stoat? Of course I didn't. It's obvious to any beast. You're an oversized toad." "Oh, sorry, the bag. Here, you take it."
Dotty swung the bag hard. There was a cracking noise as it struck the stoat's head, laying him out flat. She whirled upon the others, a perilous glint in her eyes.
"I can forgive bad grammar and insults, but that was a good flagon of old cider, a gift from my Aunt Blench, and that oaf has just broken it with his head. Unforgivable! Ah, well, there's only one thing I've got left to say to you lot. Eulalia!"
The time-honored war cry of fighting hares rang out as Dotty hurled herself upon the would-be robbers, laying about her with her bag left and right, leaping and kicking out fiercely with powerful, rangy footpaws. From the shelter of a broad beach nearby, another traveler watched the melee. He chuckled quietly. The young hare seemed to be doing fine, despite the number of vermin she was facing. Dottie had accounted for 3 more stoats, and was in the process of depriving the fat, frowsy one of her remaining snaggle teeth when Drigg caught her footpaws in a noose. The hare maid was yanked off balance and floored as 3 stoats leapt upon her back. Drigg's slopmouth drew a sharp, double-edged dagger and circled his fallen victim, calling to those who had piled in on her.
"Get her on her back and stretch her neck so's I can get a stab in. Older still, you blitherin' oafs!"
From his position behind the beech tree, the watcher decided it was time to step in and help the beleaguered hare. Drigg screeched in terror as he was lifted into the air and used as a swatter to knock the other stoats willy-nilly. His flailing paws swept vermin left and right. The wind was knocked from him as his stomach connected with the back of another, and stars exploded when his head cracked against the jaw of a hefty young stoat. Dottie scrambled upright, swinging her bag, but there was no beast to strike. Vermin lay everywhere, those still conscious moaning aloud, nursing their injuries. Drigg still hung, half-dazed, from the paw of a mighty male badger. The huge creature looked like one who would brook no nonsense from any beast, from his wild, dark eyes and rough, bearded muzzle to the homespun tunic and traveler's cloak he wore. An immense, double-hilted battle sword hung at his back. He tossed Drigg aside like a discarded wash rag and nodded sternly at the hair maid. "I've been watching you a while from beyond yon beach. For a young'un, you were doing well until they came at you from behind. Remember, if there's more than one enemy, always get your back against a rock or a tree." The hair maid kicked over a stoat who was struggling to rise. She addressed the badger none too cordially. "Well, you've got a bally nerve, I must say, telling a girl how to conduct her battles while you sit hidden on the blinkin' sidelines watching. Are you sure it wasn't too much bother having to jolly well get off your bottom and help me out?" The badger shrugged noncommittally. "As I said, I thought you were doing quite well. If I'd thought you could have taken them single-pawed, I wouldn't have stepped in." Dottie was subject to instant mood changes. She smiled, scratching ruefully at her long ears.
Suppose you're right. I lost my head a bit when that flagon of rare old cider got broken. Confounded stoat must have a noggin like a boulder. Never lose one's temper. That's what my old mum used to say."
The badger nodded sagely, carelessly stepping on Drigg's tail as the stoat tried to crawl away. "She sounds like a wise creature to me. Pity you never heeded her words. By the way, my name's Lord Brocktree." The hair maid clapped a paw to her cheek.
"Oh, my giddy aunt! I do apologize for speaking to you in that sharp manner, sir. I didn't know you were a badger lord."
A ghost of a smile hovered around Brocktree's stern face. "No matter. You were upset at the time. What do they call you, miss?" The hair maid did an elegant leg, half bow, half curtsy.
"Dorothea Duckfontaine Dilworthy at your service, sir. But I'm generally called Dottie, though my papa always said you could call me anything as long as you didn't call me late for lunch. Excuse me a tick."
The fat, frowsy female stoat had risen and was preparing to make a run for it. Dottie re-flattened her with a well-placed swing of her bag. She gestured at Drigg's band.
"What do we do with this covey of curmudgeons, my lord?"
With a fearsome swish, Lord Brocktree drew his great battle sword. It was almost as tall as himself, with a blade wide as 2 dock leaves. A moan of fear arose from the stoats. Holding it single-pawed between the double hilt, Brocktree swung the huge weapon, making the air thrum like a swan taking off into flight. Whump! He buried the point deep in the earth, and his voice dropped to a dangerous growl as he addressed the cowed vermin. "I save my sword for proper combat with real warriors. Scum such as you would only dishonor its blade. But I will make exceptions if any of you are still within my sight by the time I have counted to 3.
Remember, I always keep my word. One.
Dottie was bowled over in the mad scramble. Before the Badger Lord had counted further, Drigg's slop mouth and his wicked brood had vanished. Dottie chuckled.
By gum, that's what I should have done in the first place. Pity I didn't have a sword like this one. What a smashing old destroyer it is.
She tugged with both paws, unearthing the blade, then fell over backward under its colossal weight.
Flaming sunset, sir! How do you handle a weapon like this?
For answer, the badger picked up his sword, twirled it in a warrior's salute, and stowed it one pawed across his broad back, nodding seriously at her. Strength, I suppose. They say I was born even stronger than my father, Lord Stonepaw. Dottie flopped her ears understandingly.
I know what you mean. Beauty's always been my curse. They say I was born more beautiful than the jolly old setting sun at solstice. That's probably what made those blinking stoats attack me. Some beasts take beauty as a sign of weakness, you know. I say, did you mention that old Lord Stonepaw was your pater?
Brocktree retrieved his traveling bag from behind the beach and shouldered it.
I did.
Why, do you know of him?
Dottie pulled a face and scuffed the dust with her footpaw. I should bally well say so. I'm being sent to his blinkin' old mountain. Sala-what-you-call-it.
Salamandastron?
Aye, that's the place. My Aunt Blench is the chief cook there. I believe she's a right old battle-axe.
Lord Brocktree sensed a story behind Dottie's remarks. Seating himself, with his back against the beech tree, he unpacked provisions from his bulky haversack.
Sit down here by me, Dottie. Do you like oatcakes, cheese, and elderflower cordial?
The hair maid plunked herself willingly on the grass.
Rather? I haven't eaten for absolute ages. Almost an hour, I think. That cheese looks good.
Lord Brocktree could not help but smile at the hungry youngster.
Well, there's plenty for two, miss. Help yourself, and we'll exchange our stories. You first. Tell me, why are you being sent to Salamandastron?
3. It was an hour past dawn. The gale had passed on, and the wind subsided. Mist from the seas cloaked the western shoreline. Stiffener Medic, an old boxing hare, was just completing his daily exercise on the sands above the tide line. Though he was well on in seasons, Stiffener never neglected his daily routine. He had finished his dawn run, lifted stone and log weights, and was on to the final part of his duck and weave drill. Throwing a final few combination jabs into the mist, he retrieved his champion's belt from a rock and began fastening it about his hard-muscled waist. Stiffener's scarred ears picked up an unfamiliar sound on the ebbing tide. Batting at his nose with a loose-clenched paw, he jogged down to the water. A narrow sailing boat with its sail furled was being rowed in by a dozen big rats, their fur dyed dark blue. A cloaked figure stood at its prow as it cut through the sea mist. The hare stood his ground, ready for trouble. As the keel scraped on the sand, the craft nosed up onto the beach. Shipping their oars, the rats silently piled out and threw themselves prone upon the wet sand. Without a glance at them, the gowned and cowled figure used them as a bridge to reach dry land without wetting its elegantly shod footpaws, treading carelessly upon their upturned backs. Stiffener nodded toward the newcomer aggressively.
Ahoy there, mate! Who are you, and what do you want here?
One of the rats arose and walked over to face Stiffener. He was a big, evil-looking creature, clad in armor under a tabard embroidered with a sickle-hook insignia. The rat's voice was heavy with contempt as he addressed the old boxing hare.
Koya! Creatures of the lower orders are not allowed to speak with the Grand Fregoral. Kneel before her and stay silent, unless I address you further.
Stiffener smiled dangerously at the armored rat.
I think you'd better kneel to me, laddie buck. A lesson in good manners wouldn't go amiss in your case.
A smart whack to the jaw caused the rat to totter groggily. Stiffener clubbed down with his left paw on the rat's shoulder, forcing him into a kneeling position. Suddenly, the Boxing Hare found himself hemmed in on all sides by the swords of the other rats. One of them looked toward the hooded figure, who made a few gestures with its shrouded paws. The rat turned back to Stiffener and spoke.
No beast ever raises paw to the chosen ones and lives. You are fortunate that the Grand Fregorl has spared your miserable life, for she wishes to deliver a message to your chief, he who rules the mountain. You will take us to him.
Stiffener was not about to argue with 12 blades. He nodded to the cloaked figure, speaking as he turned to go.
You best follow me, marm. I'll take you to Lord Stonepaw, though I doubt he'll offer you breakfast if and you're bound to keep acting all high and mighty.
Stonepaw was back in his living quarters when Fleet Scott ambled in without knocking, as usual. Turning from the fog-bound view at his window, the old badger raised his hoary eyebrows at the absence of a trolley.
No breakfast today? Has Blench overslept?
Grave-faced, the ancient servant bowed stiffly.
I think the trouble we were talking about has finally arrived, my lord. Some beast to see you down at the shore entrance. You'd best get dressed for company.
Wordlessly, Stonepaw allowed his retainer to select a flowing green robe from the closet. When the badger lord had shrugged out of his nightgown, Fleet Scott climbed on a chair and assisted his master to get into the robe.
I'll get your red belt to go with that, and maybe a war helmet and javelin.
Stonepaw ignored Fleet Scott's selection.
Bring my white cord girdle. No helmet. It keeps slipping over my eyes. There's no need of a javelin either.
Picking up a long ceremonial mace, the badger surveyed himself in a long copper mirror.
Get Stiffener, Bungworthy, Sailears, and Troby. They can accompany me.
Now that dawnlight was clearer and the mist had begun to disperse, one or two of the old hares watching from vantage windows in the mountain remarked on the curious appearance of the rats and their cloaked leader below at the mountain's main entrance.
Stop my whiskers, they're blue! Must be something wrong with your eyes, old chap. Who ever heard of blue rats? I know, but look, their fur is a sort of darkish blue. Can't tell what the dickens color that one with the cloak on is. Sinister-looking bod, what?
Blench, the cook, took a final look before going off to supervise breakfast with her kitchen helpers.
Pink, blue, or rainbow-colored, that lot down there looked like trouble. You mark my words.
The heavily robed figure of the Grand Fregorl stood immobile and mysterious, but the rat who had challenged Stiffener paced up and down impatiently. He was obviously some type of officer. After a lengthy while, Lord Stonepaw and his retinue of 4 hares, all carrying javelins, appeared. The spokesrat swaggered forward. Toying arrogantly with his sword hilt, he looked Stonepaw up and down.
Are you the one in charge here? Speak!
Lord Stonepaw brushed past him as if he were not there, and pointed a great gnarled paw at the cloaked one.
Who are you? And why do you trespass upon the western shore with armed soldiers?
Removing the cowl of her cloak, the hooded one revealed herself. She was a blue-furred ferret, wearing a nose ring from which hung a gold sickle-hook amulet. Her voice carried with it the haughty tone of one used to being obeyed.
I am Grand Fregorl to Ungat Trun, ruler of the earth. You are one of the inferior species, but he has given me permission to deliver his message to you.
Feeling his hackles begin to rise, the badger lord growled,
Inferior species, eh? Stand here talking like that to me, vermin, and you'll be crab meat before the mist lifts fully. I and your rats, too. If you have something to say, then spit it out and be gone while I'm still in a reasonable mood. So speak your piece now.
Drawing a scroll from her robe, the ferret read aloud.
Be it known to all creatures of lowly order, the days of Ungat Trun are here. All of these lands and the seas that skirt them are from here on in his property. You have until nightfall to vacate this place. You must take nothing with you, neither victuals nor weapons. You will also leave behind you any serving beasts who are of use. This is the will and the law of Ungat Trun, he who holds the power to make the stars fall from the sky and the earth to tremble. Obey or die.
Stiffener Medic raised his javelin.
Just say the word, Malad, and we'll give 'em blood and vinegar. Us lower orders are pretty good at things like that, you know.
Stonepaw touched Stiffener's javelin so that it pointed down to the sand. He heaved a sigh of resignation as he replied to the Grand Fregoral.
Deliver this message back to whatever lunatic scum you serve.
Tell him that Lord Stonepaw of Salamandastron is accustomed to the blowing of windbags, as your master will find to his cost if he dares to land here. Now get out of my sight and take those blue-painted idiots with you.
Wordlessly, the ferret and her soldiers retreated to their boat and rowed off into the mists. Sailors, a garrulous old female warrior, twirled her lance nonchalantly.
Nice little parley, what?
Well, is that it?
Shaking his grizzled old head, Stonepaw turned and stumped back into his beloved mountain.
I wish it was, friend. I wish it was.
4. Lord Brocktree listened with amusement as Dottie unfolded her story.
Well, sir, what with one bally thing or another, I was always in trouble back home in the mid-eastern hills. If a confounded pie went missing from a windowsill, or some beast had been at the cider store, guess who got the blinkin' blame? Me, trouble-causer, rabble-rouser, scoff-swiper. I've been called all of those, you know. Not to mention, frog walloper and butter wouldn't melt in me mouth. Fiddle-dee-dee, I say, 'twas all because of my fatal beauty. They always pick on the pretty ones, I've already told you that. Anyhow, just after Grandpa's whiskers went afire and some villain tore the seat out of Uncle Septimus's britches, my dear old parents made a decision. Here, cast your lordly peepers over this little scrawl.
Dottie dug a tattered bark-cloth letter from her arm bag. Brocktree's dark eyes twinkled as he read it. Dear Sister Blench, Cramsey and I can no longer put up with Dorothea, so I am sending her to you. Your badger lord has our permission to deal with the wretch as he sees fit, short of slaying her. You also may do likewise. Please keep her captive upon your mountain until such time as she is civilized enough to live among decent creatures. Teach her to cook and other domestic skills. I know it is too much to ask that she be taught etiquette, deportment, and other maidenly pursuits. She is a fiend in hare's fur, believe me. Sister dear, I implore you to take her off our paws while we still have a roof over our heads, which are gray with care and worry. I would be fibbing if I said Dorothea does not eat much. She is an empty sack with legs. Her appetite would frighten a flock of seagulls. Grant her father and me this one favor, and you will have our heartfelt thanks, plus the beaded shawl Mother passed down to me, and a flagon of palest old cider from Cramsey's drinks cabinet. Please write to let me know she has arrived safely, and if she does not return by winter, I will take it that she has settled down to her new life. Cramsey sends his love to you, Blench. I remain your devoted sister. Signed, Daphne Duckfontaine Dilworthy. Brocktree had to turn his head aside and wipe his eyes on a spotted kerchief to keep from laughing. Dottie, surmising that he was wiping away tears, nodded sympathetically.
Sad, ain't it, sir, the woeful tale of a fatal beauty. I say, did you get chucked out by your parents, too? You'll forgive me saying, but a chap of your size must have taken some bally chucking, what?
The badger lord patted his young friend's paw. No, no, 'twas nothing like that, Dottie. I was restless, just like all badger lords before me. It grieved me to leave behind my young son. Boar the Fighter, I named him. A badger's son is his pride and joy, when he is a babe. But he must grow up, and it is a fact that two male badgers cannot live together in peace, especially badger lords, for that is what Boar will grow to be one day. So I had to observe the unwritten law. I left Brock Hall and began roaming to follow my dream. Dottie carefully stowed the letter back in her bag.
Beg pardon, sir, but what dream is that?
Brocktree unshouldered his battle blade and began whetting its edge on a smooth rock, even though it looked as keen as a razor. A vision I see in my mind's eye, sometimes when I'm awake, or other times when I sleep. It must have been the same picture that other badgers have dreamed. A mountain that once shot forth flames and molten rock, older than time itself, its fires now gone. Waiting. Always waiting for me on the shores of a great ocean. I could not describe the way to Salamandastron, for that is what I know the mountain is called, nor could I draw a map of the route. But something in my brain, my very heart, is guiding me there. Dottie interrupted perkily.
Oh, super duper, sir! I'm glad you know the flippin' way. I haven't got a confounded clue, only that it's someplace down on the western shores. Oh, beg pardon, sir. Didn't mean to butt in on you. Bad form, what?
Brocktree smiled at his young companion and ruffled her ears indulgently. We'll find it together, young'un. You're right. 'Tis on the western shores. In my dreams, I've seen the sun setting in the seas beyond the mountain. But my feelings tell me that the place for which we are bound will have great need of a badger lord, one who will not shrink from evil and cruelty, a warrior ready to stand and fight. Dottie chuckled, cutting once more into Brocktree's speech.
Well, your jolly old feelings have no further to look than yourself, sir. You look like the very badger to do the job, and you come ready equipped with that bloomin' great monstrosity you call a sword.
Squinting one eye, Brocktree peered down the mighty blade, deadly double edge keener than midwinter.
Aye, methinks it will have its work well cut out when the time comes. That face, the one which visits and disturbs my slumbers, I have seen nothing like it, the face that turns dreams to haunting nightmares.
The tone of Brocktree's voice caused Dottie to shudder.
Great seasons! What face is that, sir?
Nothing I want to talk more about, young'un. Now no more questions, please. We'll make camp here. There's a brook beyond that tall elm yonder. You go and fill this bowl with water while I get a small fire going.
Come on now, Dottie, stir your stumps. You'll have to shape up if you want to travel with me.
The hair maid sprang up, grabbing the bowl from Brocktree's big paws and saluting smartly in a comical manner.
Brook beyond tall elm, fill bowl with water, yes, sir. 3 bags full, sir. Going right away, sir. About turn, quick march, 1, 2, hop.
Brocktree grinned as he watched her strut off, trip, send the bowl flying, and catch it clumsily. She grinned back at him sheepishly.
Good wheeze, sending me for water, what? If you'd told me to light a fire, I'd have probably sent the whole forest up in flames. Not too clever at fires, don't you know?
Brocktree took out his tinderbox, murmuring to himself.
At least you can't flood the forest with a single bowl full of water, but who knows?
Ah, well, at least she's company for a lone traveler. Flickering shadows from the fire hovered about the woodland glade. Somewhere close by, a nightjar warbled in the branches of a sycamore. Dottie scraped a wooden ladle around the empty bowl and licked it.
Confounded good soup that was, sir. Can all badger lords cook as well as you do? Maybe you'd best fire my Aunt Blanche and promote yourself to head cook when we get to Salamathingy, what?
Brocktree hooded his eyes in mock ferocity.
If I do become head cook, I'll make sure that you get lots of sticky, greasy pots to wash, young miss.
Dottie began rummaging in her bag.
If the scoff tastes as good as that, I'll lick 'em all shining clean. Least I can do is to render you a little ditty to aid your digestion, sir.
The badger folded his paws across his stomach.
Aye, that'd be nice. Carry on.
Dottie peered into the bag as she rooted around in its interior.
Oh,
corks. Half the beads have fallen off this blinking shawl the mater gave me for Aunt Blanche. It's absolutely soaked with cider, too. Aha! Here's me faithful old hair accordion. A few of the keys and reeds are sticking, but that cider may have loosened them up a touch. Right? Here goes. Pin your ears back and get ready for a treat, what?
To describe the hair maid's voice as being akin to a frog trapped beneath a hot stone would have been a great injustice to both frog and stone. Moreover, the instrument she was playing on sounded like 10 chattering squirrels swinging on a rusty gate. However, Dottie played and sang on blithely. Brocktree squinched both eyes shut, fervently hoping that the song did not contain too many verses.
I am but a broken-hearted maid, my tale I'll tell to you, as I sit alone in this woodland glade, yearning for a puddin' or two. I high-high-high, sigh-high-high-high, high-high-ing. Whack-folly-doodle-ho, whoops-come-whang, the greatest song my grandma sang was to her family of 23. Ho, dish up the puddin', save some for me. 'Twas made from fruit and arrowroot. Hard pears and apples, too, some honey that the bees chucked out that set as hard as glue, some comfrey leaf and bulrush sheaf, and damson sour as ever. She stirred the lot in a big old pot while we sang Fail Me Never. When all of a sudden Grandma's puddin' burst right out the pot, round as a boulder, not much older, 50 times as hot. It shot down the road, laid out a toad, and knocked 2 hedgehogs flat. Splashed in the lake and slew a snake, and the frogs cried, What was that? Oh, dearie me, calamity, oh, woe, and lack-a-day, without a puddin' to my name, I'll sit and pine away, away, whack fo holly doo-hoo-hoodle day.
Dottie made her ears stand rigid on the last note to add effect, fluttering her eyelids dramatically. She was squeezing the hair accordion finally shut when its bellows shot forth a stream of old pale cider right up her nose. She sneezed and curtsied awkwardly.
Whew! That cleared my head. Shall I sing you another of my ditties, sir?
The Badger Lord demurred, hoping she would not insist. No, Dottie, please. You must save your voice for another evening. Now you should get some rest. Here, take my cloak. The hair maid settled down with the cloak swathed around her like a huge collapsed tent. She sighed.
Funny thing, you know. My voice has that effect on many creatures. You should thank the stars that you were born just a plain old badger lord. That's the trouble with being a fatal beauty with a voice that's too fine to be heard more than once a night. It affected my dad so much that he said once in a lifetime was sufficient for him.
Good job you ain't like him, sir. At least I can sing to you once every night, what?
Turning his back to her, Brocktree winced.
Well, perhaps not every single night. Don't want to strain a beautiful voice, do we?
Dottie closed her eyes, snuggling down in the cloak.
Let's just say I'll sing to you whenever I feel up to it. Good night, Brocktree, sir. I say, can I call you Brockers?
The tone of the Badger Lord's reply stifled any argument. You certainly cannot, miss.
Ha! Huh, the very idea of it. Brockers! Good night.
Morning sun broke cheerfully down upon the little camp. The twittering of birdsong caused Dottie to poke her head out of the cloak folds. Blue smoke rose in a thin column amid the dappled sun shadows cast by trees in full spring leaf. Brocktree was turning oatcakes over on a flat stone, which was laid upon the fire he had rekindled. His great striped head shook reprovingly.
Dawn has been up 2 hours, miss. Are you going to lie there all day?
Yawning and stretching, the hair maid lolloped over to the fire, muttering as she helped herself to hot oatcakes and mint tea sweetened with honey.
It's the confounded beauty sleep, that's what 'tis. My mater was always saying to me when I came down late for breakfast, "Been taking your beauty sleep again, Miguel." I say, these oatcakes are spiffin' when they're hot. Well, sir, which way do your voices say we go today, what?
Brocktree recovered his cloak and bundled it into his haversack. I think we should follow the course of that brook, where you got the water from. Sooner or later, it'll bring us to a stream. Dottie rescued the oatcakes just in time as Brocktree doused the fire and broke camp. Stuffing items in her bag, she hop-skipped behind him, slopping mint tea about and bolting oatcakes as she breakfasted on the move.
"Question, sir! Why are we looking for a stream?"
The Badger Lord replied without looking back. "Streams always run to rivers. Rivers run to the sea. That way we find the shoreline and follow it south. Sooner or later we'll come to the mountain on the west shore. Save your breath for marching, young'un." By mid-morning, Dottie was hungry, paw sore, and had nearly talked herself out, though to no effect. All she saw was the badger's broad, cloaked back with the great sword slung across it in front of her. All her observations and complaints were met with either silence or a deep grunt. Lord Brocktree was not one for lengthy conversations when he was on the march. Dottie stumbled, barking her footpaw upon a willow root as they followed the meandering brook.
"Yow, wouch! Oh, I've gone and broke a limb. The pain's shooting right up to my bally ear tips."
There was no reply, either sympathetic or otherwise, from Brocktree, who merely trudged onward. Dottie continued her lament to a ladybird that had lighted on her shoulder.
"Might have to borrow that big sword and chop off me blinking footpaw. If I find the right piece of wood, I should be able to carve another to hop along on. Breakfast was ages ago. Ages and ages and ages. I'll bet lots of poor beasts die of starvation, having to walk along for days and days behind big, rotten old badgers who never say a flippin' word."
Brocktree bit his lip hard to keep from chuckling.
"Now, if I was a badger, I'd talk all the time. In fact, I'd make it me duty to talk to nice, friendly hair maids. Oh, dearie me, I'd say, 'Hurt your foot paw, Dottie? Here, let me cut it off with my sword. You can ride up on my back until I find a log to chop up and make you a new one.'"
Brocktree halted without warning, and Dottie walked straight into his back, still chuntering to herself. He turned. "There's the stream up ahead, missy. You can sit on the bank and cool your paw in the water. That'll make it feel a lot better, and while you do that, I'll get lunch ready for us." With a deft motion, he produced his great battle blade. "But I can always oblige by doing as you wish. Here, hold out your foot paw and I'll chop it off." Dottie shot past him for the stream bank, yelling,
"Yah! I'd chop both your bloomin' great foot paws off if I could lift that sword. At least it'd slow you down a bit. Lord Paw Whacker, they should have called you."
The hair maid's mood softened as she sat cooling her foot paws in the shade of a tree, letting the soothing stream work its magic as she ate lunch. Brocktree had gathered some early berries and mixed them with chopped apple and hazelnuts from his pack, which made a delicious fruit salad with a syrup of honey and stream water poured over them. Then the badger gave her dock leaves and water weed he had collected along the stream bank. "If your paw's still sore, bind it with these. That will fix it up." Taking the badger's face in both paws, Dottie murmured,
"Now look straight at me, sir. Pretend I'm thanking you. Now don't look over. But there's a willow overhanging the water the other side of the stream. Don't look. There's some beast in there watching us."
Brocktree straightened up, winking swiftly at her. "Oh, right. I'll look further down the bank. See if I can find you some bigger dock leaves. Sit and rest. I'll not be long." He strode off down the bank, disappearing around a bend. Dottie could feel the watcher's eyes on her from the willow shade on the far bank. Taking care not to stare back, she acted as though she were completely unaware of the presence of an eavesdropper. Taking the hair accordion out of her bag, she placed it in the warm sunlight to dry out. Then, dangling her footpaws in the clear, cool current, the hair maid hummed a little tune to herself, flicking the odd, secret glance across the stream. She reflected that had she been completely alone, a tranquil setting such as this would have been the ideal place to while away the sunny spring midday. However, the peace was short-lived.
Amid sudden howls and roars, the overhanging willows seemed to explode in a shower of leaves and twigs. Foliage scattered across the stream surface as two burly forms smashed through the tree cover and crashed heavily into the water. Dottie hurled herself into the stream, whirling her bag aloft.
"Hang on, sir! I'm coming! Eulalia!"
5. Off the western shores, a heavy fog persisted. The afternoon had not fulfilled the morning's promise. Beneath a dirty white sky, layers of mist sat unmoved on a still sea, its oily, waveless swell lapping tiredly against the hull of a large, barnacle-crusted ship, whose single sail hung furled. A small boat hove alongside, and the Grand Fregoral climbed into a canvas sling which had been lowered from the ship. She nodded and was hoisted swiftly aboard. An aisle appeared amidst the blue-furred rats who crowded the deck, and silently she climbed out and made her way through to the stern cabin. The interior of Ungat Trun's stateroom resembled the stuff of which nightmares are made. Dangling from thick chains, deep copper bowls contained fire that burned blue and gave off a heavy lilac-colored smoke. Oppressive heat enveloped the cabin, heightening the nauseous stench of rotting flesh. Huge cobwebs festooned every corner, spreading up over the deckheads, set aquiver by fat, hairy forms which scuttled back and forth after the flies that buzzed everywhere. Carefully avoiding the webs, the Grand Fregoral made her way to the cabin center and prostrated herself, face down, with one paw raised in the air. Two other creatures sat in silence watching her, one a small silver-furred fox, its growth stunted by some terrible accident, giving it a shriveled appearance. The fox, a quill pen held awkwardly in its crabbed paw, was seated at a table where it had been peering through thick, crystal-lensed eyeglasses at various scrolls piled upon the tabletop. This was Grottle, High Magician to Ungat Trun. Now, turning his eyes from the Grand Fregoral, he sat watching his master for a sign. Only the tail of the wildcat moved. Black-ringed and yellowish-gray, with a thick, rounded tip, it seemed to possess a life of its own, swishing back and forth behind Ungat's chair. The fiercest of warriors, Ungat Trun had no time for personal fripperies, but dressed like any plain fighter. Chain-mail tunic, two iron bracelets, and a mail-fringed steel helmet surmounted by a spike. Yet any beast only had to look at him to see that here was a ruthless conqueror. Beneath the striped brow, permanently creased in a frown, the wildcat's fearsome black and gold eyes remained hooded and unblinking, his stiff white whiskers overhanging two sharp amber fangs, which showed even when his mouth was shut. He stared at the prone ferret stretched on his cabin floor. Then, turning his gaze aside, he nodded briefly to his magician. Grottle spoke in a thin, reedy voice, starting with his master's praises.
"Know ye that ye are in the presence of the mighty Ungat Trun, son of the Highland King Mortspear, and brother to Verdaga Greeneye. Ungat Trun, who makes the stars fall and the earth shake so that the lesser orders will fear him. Ungat Trun, whose blue hordes are as many as leaves of the forest or sands of the shores. Ungat Trun, who drinks wine from the skulls of his enemies. This is Ungat Trun, the fearsome beast, and these are his days."
The Grand Fregoral, still face down on the floor, called aloud the ritual answer required of her.
"Though I dare not look upon his face, I know that Ungat Trun is here, and these are his days."
Ungat replied in his coarse, rasping voice.
"So be it. Did you see my mountain? What took place there? Tell me all, and speak true, or flies will be born from your carcass to feed my web-makers."
The Fregoral allowed herself a fleeting glimpse of a dead rat moldering in a corner, knowing all too well what happened to any beast foolish enough to displease Ungat Trun.
Though the heat in the cabin was stifling, the ferret felt cold sweat break out beneath her long robes. She spoke, fighting to stop her voice trembling.
"Oh, fearsome one, I saw your mountain, though not all of it, only what the mists would allow. I was not invited inside. It is called Salamandastron, just as you said. The place is defended by inferior species, rabbit things who all appear to be well on in seasons. They are ruled by a strike dog called Lord Stonepaw, who is even older than they. He said many insulting things, which I fear to repeat, but mainly he said it would be to your cost if you dared to land upon his shores. I followed your orders, O Ungat Trun, and not stopping to bandy words with the strike dog or his creatures, I returned to you immediately."
Only the flies could be heard as they buzzed around the conqueror's stateroom. Neither Fregorl nor Grottle moved. A fly swooped across Ungat's vision, and his paw shot out like greased lightning and caught it. Holding it to his ear, he listened to its anguished hum, then tossed it swiftly upward where it lodged in a cobweb. In a flash, two voracious webmakers were upon the trapped insect. Ungat never looked up, his hooded eyes fixed on the ferret sprawled near his footpaws.
"You did well, my Fregorl. You may rise and go now."
When the ferret had departed, Ungat poured wine into a goblet fashioned from the bleached skull of a long-dead otter.
"Read me the prophecy again, Grottle."
Hastily sorting out a scroll, the fox unrolled it.
"No highland willed from kin deceased, or quest for castles vague unknown, for Ungat Trun, the fearsome beast, will carve a fortune of his own. Find the mountain, slay its lord, put his creatures to the sword. When the stars fall from the sky, red the blood flows neath the sun. Then let mothers wail and cry, these are the days of Ungat Trun. Hark, no bird sings in the air, the earth is shaking everywhere. His reign of terror has begun, for these are the days of Ungat Trun."
A fat spider fell from its web, landing on the wildcat's shoulder. He let it run down onto his paw, turning the paw over and back again as the spider scurried to escape.
"Now explain it to me."
As he had done several times, Grottle translated.
"It says that you are too fierce and strong to accept the Highland Kingdom when your father dies, nor are you a wandering robber dreaming of conquering some castle as your young brother Verdaga says he will do some day. You will establish your own realm, ruling it from a mountain that is greater than any other. No beast has an army to command as large as your blue hordes. I am your magician, and I say that tonight you will see the stars fall from the sky. At tomorrow's dawn, you will feel the earth shake beneath you."
The wildcat stared levelly at the undersized fox.
"You have many clever tricks, Grottle. But if you fail me, then you will feel the earth shake from above you, because I will be dancing on your grave. What about the Badger Lord? Tell me."
Grottle knew the wildcat would not slay him. He was far too valuable a creature for any warlord to kill. The magician fox merely shrugged and went back to studying his scrolls.
"The striped dog is as your Fregorl described, an old one. He should be no trouble to the mighty Ungat Trun."
The wildcat leaned on the desk, bringing his face close to the fox.
"My dreams do not contain any doddering ancient strike dog. The one who disturbs my slumbers is a badger of middle seasons with the mark of a warrior stamped on him. So, my withered friend, explain that to me."
Grottle removed his eyeglasses and began wiping them.
"I cannot dream your dreams for you all the time. This badger, you see, might be just that, a dream."
Ungat returned to his chair, stroking his fangs.
You'd better hope for your sake that he is, Groddle.
Lord Stonepaw had been staring from his window at the masses of fog shrouding the seas. He was beginning to see phantom shapes looming in the mists, as one is apt to after gazing a while. He rubbed at his tired old eyes and lumbered over to his bed, where he sat down to brood over the troubles that beset him. Stiffener Medic knocked on the door and entered.
"Sire, every hair jack in the place is waiting on you to come and talk to him. They're gathered in the main chamber, armed to the ears and primed for action."
With a weary sigh, the Badger Lord rose.
"The old, the weak, and the feeble. I wish we were all as fit as you, Stiffener. If wishes were fishes. Oh, well, fetch me my armor and javelin. Least I can do is to go down there looking like a mountain lord."
The main chamber was just short of half-filled with hares. Two of them, Bungworthy and Troby, assisted the armored badger up onto a rock platform. Stonepaw shook his head sadly as he assessed his army. Holding up his javelin, he waited until silence fell, then he spoke up loudly for the benefit of those hard of hearing.
"Good creatures, faithful comrades, you know I have always spoken truly to you, so I am not going to lie about our present situation. I see before me many brave warriors. Alas, none of them young and sprightly any more. Like you, I too can remember the seasons gone, when this chamber and the passages outside would be packed solid with young fighting hares. Now we are but a pitiful few. But that does not mean we cannot fight."
A ragged cheer rose from the old guard, accompanied by warlike comments.
"Eulalia! Aye, we'll give 'em blood and vinegar, sire. Where with you to the last beast, lord? We ain't called Stonepaw's stalwarts for nothing, what? Send 'em on, and let's begin the game."
A tear trickled from Stonepaw's eye. Hastily, he brushed it aside and swelled his chest out proudly.
"I am honored to lead you. We know not the number of our foes, or how skilled they be at weaponry, but let's give them a hot old time in true Salamandastron fashion."
Amid the cheering, orders were shouted out.
"Bar all entrances. Archers at the high window slits. Long pikes at the low windows. Stone slingers on the second level. Sailiers, take your crew up onto the high ledges where the boulder heaps are ready."
As the hares dispersed to their places, Lord Stonepaw held two of them back.
"Blench, Marm, they'll need feeding. I know you've only got a few kitchen helpers left, but can you see to it?"
The head cook saluted with an iron ladle.
"Hain't seen the day I couldn't, my lord. There'll be no beast fighting on a empty belly while I'm around."
She whirled off, yelling at her helpers.
"Check the larders and bring the list to me. Gather in anything that's growing up on those ledge gardens. Fruits, salad, vegetables, anything."
Stonepaw turned to the one hare left, his faithful retainer.
"Fleet's Cut, have you still got the ability and wind to be called a runner?"
The ancient hare laughed mirthlessly.
"S'pose I could still kick up a bit of dust, my lord. Why?"
Stonepaw lowered its voice to a whisper.
"Good creature, I want you to draw field rations and leave this mountain within the hour. Go where you will, but use your wits. Search out your young wandering warriors and any bands of hares about the countryside. Young ones with a touch of warrior's blood in their eye. We need help as we've never needed it. Find them and bring them back to Salamandastron as fast as you can."
Fleet's Cut bowed dutifully as he flexed his paws.
"I'll give it a jolly good try, sire."
Lord Stonepaw hugged his old friend briefly.
"I know you will, you old grass walloper. Good luck."
When Fleet's Cut had left, the Badger Lord retired to his secret chamber. When he had sprinkled herbs into the burning lanterns, he sat back, closing his eyes and breathing deeply. Concentrating hard, He willed the face of his successor to appear in his mind.
"Where are you, strong one? Come to me. I need you now. Feel the call of the mountain and hurry to it."
Stonepaw finally drifted into slumber, rewarded by no sight of any badger's face, just a worrying puzzlement of troubles as yet unborn. 6. Lord Brocktree felt himself borne underwater by an adversary of tremendous strength, which seemed to increase on contact with the stream. The beast was built of muscle and steely sinew, wrapping itself about the badger's head, neck, and shoulders, blocking off air and light in a skillful deathlock. As soon as he felt his paws touch bottom, Brocktree used his formidable strength, thrusting upward to the surface with a powerful shove. As both beasts broke the surface, the badger managed to gasp in a breath of air. Then he was aware of thudding blows raining on his opponent as Dotty yelled, "Gear off! I'll pound your blinking head to a jelly if you don't let him go and jolly well fight fair!" The beast wrapped around Brocktree's head roared aloud, "Fair? You call 2-1 fair? Youch! Ouch! Ouch that bag, you doodle-pawed fool! You near put me eye out! Ow!" The badger lord seized his chance. Clamping his paws around his assailant's tail and jaws, he tore the creature from him and lifted it above his head. It was kicking and wriggling as he hurled it forcefully into the far shallows. Then, diving down, he grabbed his battle blade, which had fallen from his back in the struggle. Dotty gasped with fright as the massive badger lord surfaced in a cascade of stream water, whirling his sword aloft.
"Brocktree of Brockhall! Bones and blood!"
The otter, for it was a fully grown male of that species, stood up dripping in the shallows.
"Aye, aye, steady on there, matey. There ain't no need to go swinging swords around. What's your trouble?"
Brocktree waded toward him, sword still upraised.
"You were trying to drown me back there, murderer."
The otter threw back his head and chortled.
"Ho, ho, ho! Murderer, is it, Cully? Shame on ye! You're the one who sneaked up and started all this, ambusher!"
Dotty thought about this for a moment, then, wading over, she placed herself between both creatures.
"Stap me if he ain't right, sir. It was you who attacked him first, you know."
Brocktree dropped his sword in bewilderment.
"Hi there, miss. Whose side are you on, mine or his?"
The otter sat down in the shallows, chuckling merrily.
"Now, now, used to stop all your argifying. Tell you what, do you like water shrimp and not root soup? I've got a pan of it on the go. Should be plenty for three."
At the mention of food, Dotty felt immediately friendly.
"I've never tasted it, but I'm sure I'll like it, sir."
The otter waded over, paw outstretched.
"Ha! Don't serve me, young'un. I goes by the name of Roughgar Brookback. You can call me Rough, though. Rough by name, rough by nature. That's what my old grandma used to say when I wrestled her."
Dotty looked at him in surprise.
"You used to wrestle with your old grandma?"
Rough grinned.
"Aye, but she always beat the daylights out of me. Come on, hearties, follow me."
Further upstream, they came upon Rough's camp. Merely a blanket made into a lean-to. There was a slow-burning turf fire on the bank edge and a long, flat elm trunk floating in the water. Rough attended to a cauldron of soup bubbling on the fire, dipping in a wooden ladle and sampling it gingerly.
"Ha-har! All right and ready. This is the stuff to put a shine on your fur and a glint in your eye. Good old Otroot."
He scrambled aboard the log, which was obviously his boat, and retrieved a battered traveling bag. From this he dug 3 enormous scallop shells, tossing one apiece to Dotty and Brocktree.
"Dig in now. I ain't your mother. Serve yourselves, mates."
Dotty filled her shell and went at it like a gannet in a 10-season famine.
"Yah! Woo! Mother help me! I'm on fire! Oh! Oh!"
Ruff, who had been watching in amusement, took pity on her and scooped up some cold stream water in his shell.
"Cool your gob on this, missy,"
She drained the water in a single gulp, blinked the tears from her eyes, and sniffed.
Good stuff, this, what? A little warm and spicy, but first-class soup. I like it.
Ruff and Brocktree sat gaping as she refilled her shell and tucked in with a will. The badger winked at the otter. She's a hare, you see. Ruff nodded sagely.
Aye, that explains it, mate.
After the meal, they lay about on the bank, and Dottie and Brocktree told Ruff their stories. Ruff explained to them how he came to be in those parts.
I'm a bit like you, young Dottie. I left home when I was young, just before they decided to sling me out. Wild and mischievous. Ha ha! I was more trouble than a bag of bumblebees. Me poor old grandma was sorry to see me go, but the rest of me family breathed a sigh of relief. Anyhow, I've been a loner most of the time. It ain't so bad. No beast to keep shouting. Ruff, stop that. Ruff, don't you dare. Nowadays, I can do what I likes without any beast hollering at me.
Brocktree nodded. And what are you doing at present, Ruff?
Oh, a bit of this and a bit of that. Nothing, really. Why?
The Badger Lord's eyes twinkled. Dottie and I need to get down to the shores of the Great Sea. Best way to do that is to follow waterways, as you well know.
It would be nice if we could go by boat instead of all that trekking by paw. Suppose you came with us.
Ruff's rudder-like tail thwacked down upon the bank, propelling him upright, grinning from ear to ear.
No sooner said than done, Brock me hearty. Can you two paddle?
Dottie replied for them both.
Well, if we can't, I bet you'll soon teach us, what? I'm no badger lord, but I'm jolly well strong of paw.
Ruff touched the swelling around his eye.
You already proved that, by the way you swing your bag.
Floating down the broad, sunlit stream was a very pleasurable experience. Dottie and Brocktree soon picked up the knack of wielding a paddle. Passing beneath overhanging trees, the young hairmaid sighed with joy, watching the dappled patterns of sunshine and shade drifting by on the smooth, dark green water.
Oh, whoopsie-doo and fiddly-dee! This is the life, eh, sir? I say there, Ruff, my old stream basher, do you know any jolly songs that creatures sing when they're out boating?
The otter flicked water at her with his paddle.
Bless your heart, Dottie. Of course I do. But they're called shanties or water ballads. Here's one you can both join in with. The chorus is very simple. Helps to keep the rhythm of the paddles going, you see. It goes like this.
Ruff sang the chorus once, then launched into a deep-throated old boat song.
Hey-ho, ahoy we go! Row, me hearties, row, row, row. Chucklin', bubblin', life's a dream. I'm the brook that finds the stream. Hey-ho, ahoy we go. Row, me hearties, row, row, row. Sun and shade and fish a-quiver, this old stream flows to the river. Hey-ho, ahoy we go. Row, me hearties, row, row, row. Down, mates, down and foller me. I'm the river, bound to the sea. Hey-ho, ahoy we go, row me hearties, row, row, row.
Ruff's elm tree fairly skimmed the water, with him singing the verses and his two friends roaring out the chorus like two seasoned old river beasts. The otter signaled them to stop rowing.
Ship your paddles, mates. Let her run with the current.
Normally a staid creature, as befits a badger lord, Brocktree was exhilarated, grinning like a dibbon.
My, my, Ruff, I can see why you love the freedom of the waterways. It certainly is a pleasant experience.
Guiding his elm-log boat with the odd paddle stroke, Ruff watched the stream ahead knowingly.
Oh, it ain't so bad most seasons, but don't go getting too taken up with it, Brock. He gets the ice in winter, snow, hail, rainstorms, dry creeks, rocks, driftwood, and gales. Once you get used to that lot, then you got to face rapids, sandbanks, cross currents, and waterfalls. Aside from that, there's savage pike and eel shoals and all manner of bad-minded vermin watching the water and hunting their prey
both sides of the banks."
Dottie waved a paw dismissively.
"Oh, pish tush, sah. It doesn't seem to bother you."
Ruff pulled a tangle of line from his pack. Checking the hook and weight on it, he baited up with a few water shrimp left over from the hot root soup.
"Fish for supper, shipmates. Look here at this fat shoal of dace."
Through the deep, fast-flowing stream, they glimpsed the dace, cruising through the trailing moss and weed, their olive-green backs and silver flanks shining wherever rays of sunlight pierced the water. They were fine, plump fish. Ruff trailed the line as they followed the log, keeping in its shadow.
"I'll just snag two of the beauties. That should do us. Hearken to me, Dottie. If you're bound to take the life of a living thing for food, then take only what you need. Life's too precious a thing to be wasted. Ain't that right, Brock?"
The badger nodded solemnly. "Aye, that's so. A lesson every creature should learn." That evening they camped at the mouth of a small inlet and Ruff cooked the fish for them. After the long day on the stream, it was a delicious meal. Lord Brocktree sat back, cleaning his teeth with a twig.
"I've tasted trout and grayling, but never anything like that dace before. You must tell me how you prepared it, Ruff."
Looking furtively about, the otter managed a gruff whisper.
"My grandma's secret recipe, 'tis, and if she was here now, she'd scalp me tail with a birch rod for telling you. You needs tender new dandelion shoots, wild onions, and hedge parsley. Oh, and two fat leeks. Chop 'em all up and set 'em o'er the fire in a little water, but don't boil 'em. Then when you've topped and tailed your two dace, you lays them fishes flat on a thin rock. Mix corn flour and oats with a drop of water from your vegetables and spread it o'er the fishes so they bakes with a good crunchy crust. Drain off the vegetables while they're still firm, spread 'em in a bed, and top the lot off with your dace. But don't you two ever breathe a word to any otter that 'twas me what told you the recipe. Alive or dead, old Grandma'd either hunt or haunt me."
Dottie began reaching for her hair accordion.
"Time for a jolly old ditty, eh, chaps?"
No beast was more relieved than Brocktree when Ruff put the blocks on the hair maid's warbling.
"Best not, missy mate. This ain't too friendly a part of the woodlands. You'd probably attract unwelcome visitors. Best sleep now. We've got an early start in the morn."
End of side one. To continue, turn the cassette over.